So on the program today, we have three people from the National Alcohol Research Center. My colleague and biostatistician, Yu Yi, he's sitting back there so he can see the screen. And also my associate director and colleague, Cheryl Schipatel. And finally, Kim Bloomfield from Aarhus University Center for Alcohol and Drug Research. So welcome, everybody. And I will crash right into this so we stay on time. So this is a study in which, just to give you a little background, we are using both cell phones and landlines to reach a national sample. And so what motivates this talk is that the landline survey that we did in 2010 is quite a lot longer than the cell phone survey, which had to be shorter. And therefore, there are quite a lot of items that are on the landline survey that are not on the cell phone survey. So let me move along here. No relationships to disclose of any note, that is. And so in this survey, we had over 1,000 cell phones. And as you can see, there are a little over 5,000 landlines. We reach about 97% of the U.S. households because, surprisingly, in the U.S. at least, telephone coverage is very good, especially when you include the cell phones. Because increasingly, as you probably know, there are increasing numbers of households that do not have landlines. They only have cell phones. This is a growing trend. It's every year there are more people who only have cell phones. And I think it is pretty natural that that might be the case because, in effect, nowadays, you carry your phone with you and you can be reached any time. And why bother with a landline? And that's the position of many younger people, many ethnic minorities. And so these folks are being increasingly lost to landline RDD caddy surveys. So our earlier work has found that there were major differences demographically in these two groups. And I just want to show you quickly some of those differences. And I am supposed to use a cursor so that it will show up on the screen for the recording that I believe is being made. But as you can see, it depends on the item whether there is much of a difference. For example, in education, there isn't so much of a difference. But in retirees, we had huge numbers of retirees in our landline survey because they're the ones with the landlines, and very few of those in the cell phone. But conversely, you can see that some of the other areas are quite different. There are still more males in the cell phone, and the incomes are a bit different, and the employment is a bit different. Interestingly, the cooperation rate on the cell phone was extremely good, 71% responses. Now, they were offered an incentive, which at the time we were not doing in the landlines, but also my theory about this, which is, I think, valuable, is that people answer when they're at work, and lots of people don't care about their work very much, and if they get a call, yeah, I'll give you an interview. Why not? Otherwise, I'd have to be working. So I think at the moment, and I think this may change because I think people are going to start getting hit with advertising, as I've begun to do, and other things on the cell phone. It's going to change, but at the moment, I think it's still ahead from that point of view. The background of this work is that our adjustments to make it representative of the nation, of adults in the nation, I should say, is that we have a weighting factor developed for the landlines and also one for the dual-frame joint cell phone landline It's quite a complicated weighting process to do that, but the idea we had was that since there were these demographic differences, heuristically, could we identify people in the landline who were really rather like the cell phone people, but they were in the landline, and upweight those and see if we'd get better results by that strategy. And the approach was a propensity score approach. We developed a weighting system. Yu-Yi had a lot to do with this, which uses propensity scores to evaluate whether you're essentially like a cell phone case when you're in the landline sample, and then weight accordingly. So just to give you a picture of some of the differences again, one of the things that in the U.S. makes it possible to do this kind of work of merging a cell phone and a landline sample is that the NHIS gathers data with the information that you see here. I'll try to point to it. This information, landline only, landline mostly, landline equal to cell phone and cell phone mostly, how easily you're reached by these methods. And this is a large-scale face-to-face survey with a very good coverage rate, a good response rate, and these questions are asked. So it allows us to use a scheme to understand more about the differences based on this. And I think you can see in the bottom line, the volume mean, that there are some big differences in these different groups. So the cell only has a much higher volume of consumption. And since we're talking about the landline cases, those are the three cases that would be, there are in fact some cell mostly cases in the landline. If you look down at the landline column, which is here, you'll see that there are some cases reached by landline that mostly use their cell phones. So that, those are good candidates for people who might be like the cell phone only people who can't be reached by landline. I've more or less told you the approach. This gives more details. And by the way, there is a handout available which you can download after the meeting or during the meeting or anytime you want. I'm probably not going to skim over a lot of things. So I'm not going to actually talk much about this because we'll run out of time. And just to say that there's quite a lot of prior research on propensity score approaches. And it's been used for dealing with missingness is one of the, and this is in a sense missingness of people who could only be reached by cell phone. So it's a similar kind of problem. So here are some of the predictors we used for predicting whether they were like a cell phone, how they had a propensity score that made them like the cell phone people. Gender, age, race, ethnicity, and so forth. You can see all of those. An important one, religion, denomination, particularly Catholic, as you know, and no religion are important for drinking. And importance of religion is also another thing that affects drinking behavior. And then some alcohol-related priors, age of onset, and family or blood relative. So these are things that might predict both consumption and potentially problems. So the validating variables, I'll mention how we did the validation. Once we'd done the propensity score weighting, upweighting these cases that had a propensity for being like a cell phone case, we compared that to the results with the cell phone. In other words, combining the samples. Because arguably that's the gold standard because it's the one that has, you know, reached everybody, if you like, the 97%, that is, in the U.S. So there are two problem variables, four drinking variables, and the difference in the two, A and B, is that one is adjusted for drink size. The other is not. So, B and C. A is simply drinking status, current drinking, ex-drinker, lifetime abstainer. And the two drinking problem variables are familiar to you, I'm sure. So I've mentioned that we examine the differences, and interestingly, on the variables in the propensity score weighting, there was virtually no difference and no significant difference. That's inherent in the sense that the propensity score is reweighting the sample, and so the variables used to do that reweighting should look very like the gold standard, which is the combined sample, and they do. However, if you, as I pointed out, if you don't do the adjustment, then there are these big demographic differences. So now what we did for the validation was we took the census-based landline ONI, which is the original way that one typically weights a sample, any sample, and compared that to the propensity score weights. And as you see here in this sort of findings, after the propensity score weighting, the absolute difference in the drinking variables is only 1.4% different, whereas, in fact, compared to the landline only census-based, it's a much bigger difference, 5.1% on average, absolutely. Here is the key table in this, and I'll spend a little time just walking you through it. So this is the landline and cell combined, which I'm calling the gold standard, because it is the best sample we have. Here's the landline only weighted according to the census, and here is the landline with the propensity score weighting that tries to, in effect, heuristically bring back the cell phone people or the people most like them. So the absolute difference is meaning it could be a difference in either direction, but you can see that comparatively the difference of the landline and the propensity score weighting is considerably less on these drinking variables, which are these four. And here's the mean, 0.78 difference here, under a percent, and 4.35 in the case of the standard normal census weighting that you would do with a landline case. So we did very well with drinking variables, is the bottom line. With drinking variables, it works extremely well. It seems to improve compared to just a census-based weighting. So it certainly seems a desirable and appropriate thing to do. We don't do as well with the drinking problem variables, and so one remaining task is to try to figure out why that might be. We, in a sense, have these two age of onset and biological and other family members with problems. One possibility, although it would be a little strange, would be to include some of the drinking variables in the propensity score weighting if you were going to do sort of problem estimates. But if you want to do a risk curve or something like that, that wouldn't work. So, and you can see that the results are not as good in the case of the problem variables. They're not terrible, and they're not worse, but they're just not much better. So one thing that's interesting is that when you do the propensity score weighting, all of the results all of the estimates are greater. And as we know, most of our estimates are conservative and actually undercount both drinking and problems. Part of the issue is that our coverage rate of alcohol consumption in surveys is not too good. 40 to 60% of the estimates typically depends on the survey and the measures. Sally Caswell in New Zealand does a lot better when she does multiple drinking contexts as her measure. The trouble is some of those may overcount because they overlap, in my view. So it looks like you're getting very good coverage of the alcohol consumption, but whether it's really a better measure, I'm not quite convinced. But in any case, applying the adjusted weighting does seem to reduce the underestimate. So that that we think is positive. So it may be a bit of an over-adjustment in the case of the problems, it appears. So a number of our prior studies have used propensity score weighting in mortality studies and other kinds of comparison group studies. And a remaining task that I sort of talk about here is, what are the predictors? Maybe we can do better with the predictors. Why is it exactly that the alcohol consumption measures are better handled than problems? Maybe there's some obvious things there, but I think we're going to try to push this forward and bring this to publication. I want to thank you for listening, and there are some references, so if you get the handout, you can get the references too.